We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Friday to you, and it is a beautiful TGIF edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Kicking off on this October 18th and only on 1037 The Game for the next 2.5 hours. Yours truly, Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D. We got you. Taking you home and into your football Friday, into your weekend from inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. I will get to the latest injuries on the Saints front. Coming up on a big contest this Sunday afternoon in the Windy City, but we have to lead off with the Houston Astros, one win away from the franchise's second World Series berth in the last 3 years. And I can't help myself. I've got to say it. A.J. Hinch's guys, savages in the Bronx. His guys are just savages in the Bronx. Look at what they're doing. I mentioned it with Blaine Viator yesterday. On the cusp of losing both games to start this series at home, on the cusp of being maybe like LSU going to Omaha years ago under Smoke Laval. 2-Q, gone. And yet, they turn it around. Correa with a huge bomb in the 11th inning of Game 2. It goes to New York, Splitsville, at 1-1. And as we suggested on yesterday's program, it may not come back to Houston, at least not in the ALCS. The Astros, now with a commanding 3-1 lead after an 8-3 win. Springer, Correa, 3-run bombs apiece. Greinke, better, not great, but all he needed to be. 4 1/3 innings, 4 walks, a little concerning. It's interesting that between Cole in game three, no, I had it right the first time, didn't I, CD? Anyway, the last two starts. Between Cole and Greinke, almost double-digit walks issued, but they keep the earned runs and the runs total allowed way down. And how about Ryan Pressly? He's been injured for so much of this season, especially late in the year. And one of the most coveted relievers in all of baseball dodged a bases-loaded jam in the fifth. We've been following this thing, not just in the Acadiana area, but here on Acadiana Sports Station, airing all the Stros games. We've been following this for 162 regular season games. It took all five of the ALDS, and it's just very interesting that it could end tonight in five in the ALCS. And it's Aaron Boone's guys, you know, those savages in the box. Well, suddenly, they're not filling up the box score. The Astros pitching is answering the call at exactly the right time. And Correa, who had been slumping, Springer, all leaping to the forefront. I mentioned Pressly, pretty darn good Houdini-act in the fifth with the bases loaded. Got to give some props as well to a former LSU Tiger, Will Harris. Just dominant. One inning pitched, 2 strikeouts, didn't give up a hit. And so you stand on the precipice of getting back to the World Series. And what do you have? Well, tonight you've got Justin Verlander going against James Paxton. Paxton, for the Yankees, has been a lot like Greinke for the Stros, at least until last night. He's been erratic. They can't count on him. They've got a short leash for him. And look at what you've got ahead of you now, if you're Hinch. You've got Verlander in a closeout game on the road, and then you get to pick where you want Gerrit Cole if somehow this gets back to Houston for Game 6 and an, if necessary, Game 7 this weekend. Gerrit Cole could pitch 6 or 7 for you. My gut tells me if it's needed, he'll throw tomorrow night. But this is an incredible spot for the Astros to be in. And I love being wrong when I'm wrong like this. I was worried about what the Justin Verlander short rest start, game 4 of the ALDS. I was concerned for what that would do to the Stros rotation against this mighty Yankees offense. And right now, the Strohs are the one that are flexing in the Bronx. They've got Yankees fans that are hurling souvenir baseballs at the Astros outfielders. Apparently, oh, and we'll touch on this more in the 5 o'clock hour, they're making fun of Zach Greinke and his well-documented bout with anxiety and depression. Yeah, Yankees fans are a real treat. And right now, they're being treated to maybe a sweep of 3 games in the ALCS in their own backyard. It's been incredible what the Astros are doing. And so as we follow this thing through in the midst of football season, even creeping up on the tip-off of an NBA campaign, all of it is swirling around us, and yet the Strohs have a chance to get back to the World Series and then take it back against the Nats. It's been incredible. We'll take your phone calls on the subject. 706-0111. I do, in this opening segment, want to touch on the late breaking news out of New Orleans. Alvin Kamara out. Knee and ankle injuries are listed. I continue to hear more about the ankle and the potential of a high ankle sprain. We discussed that ad nauseum on yesterday's program. Many of us believing that's the more pressing issue going forward with this Saints offense, more so than Drew Brees and his thumb that's currently got the Saints QB out. But Alvin Kamara will not play against the Bears and their vaunted defense. Neither will Jared Cook, out with an ankle injury. That's one that I didn't see coming. At least it wasn't in focus quite as clearly for me. Who are they going to join? Some of the usual suspects. Brees, we know, is out. Tre'Quan Smith in the receiving corps out. Trey Hendrickson, yet again, along the defensive line, out as the Saints travel to take on the Bears. What does it mean for the Saints offense? It means a steady dose of Latavius Murray. It means, I completely agree with what we heard earlier in the week from Gus Kattengill, it means, as Gus said, resetting the pocket. This will have to be, in my opinion, a little bit more of an under-center game as opposed to being in the shotgun for Teddy Bridgewater. A little more downhill running at a single back sets, maybe occasionally behind Zach Line in an I set. Maybe following a lead blocker like a Taysom Hill. I think this is going to be a downhill running game for Latavius Murray. Play action, some waggle, and some short, safe, consistent passing from Bridgewater to some of the other targets, namely Michael Thomas. Because if you can't lean on Kamara, you're going to have to get a little more creative in different ways. And you might just have to get a little more traditional. I guess that's what I'm pointed toward. And so no Kamara in the backfield, no Cook at tight end. Boy, Sean Payton's getting tested this season. Coach, what could you do without number 9, a Hall of Famer? He's answered the call there. In games played in tight quarters, like we saw last week at Jacksonville, like we saw against Dallas, and like I expect on Sunday. In shootout affairs, like we saw against Tampa, Payton's mettle has been tested a lot this season. He continues to answer the bell. We'll see what Boy Wonder has going up against the best defense in the NFL and doing it without Brees and Kamara. This will be a stiff test. On the other side, for the Bears, Mitch Trubisky officially listed as questionable. He's been splitting reps with Chase Daniel, longtime New Orleans Saints, and a backup to Drew Brees. I would expect Trubisky to go. That's just been the rumbling out of the Windy City for much of this week. And so while we're all focused on how the Saints offense will perform down Brees, down Kamara, I hope that Dennis Allen is ready to get after an injured Mitch Trubisky, a backup in Chase Daniel. They watched him for years take snaps against this defense, no matter who it's going to be. Maybe even a combination of Trubisky and Daniel. I'm hoping that this weekend that it's a free-for-all and a tee-off fest, and that there's a chance for Cam Jordan, a bit of an emerging Marcus Davenport, in case you haven't noticed. Sheldon Rankins, Malcolm Brown, and a blitzing fiend at linebacker, Demario Davis. I'm hoping it's a weekend where they show they're ready for a defensive party as well. All right, big program today on a Friday. We let off with the Strohs and the Saints. We've got our sink or swim questions coming up on the other side of this break. That means over-unders on the LSU State game. Get active early for that one. And at half past the hour, we're taking you to New Orleans. Ken Trahan, Crescent City Sports. All in on the Saints. At straight up 5 o'clock, Justin Vincent. A little more LSU football chatter there. And I'm excited at 5:45 to welcome aboard first-timer to the show, three-phase Sage. LCA Knights DB, wide receiver, kick and punt returner Sage Ryan will join the show. LCA with a big 17-14 win at the Notre Dame Pios last night. We'll have Sage Ryan aboard at 5:45. And from 6 to 6:30, RP3 steps in. It's Football Night in Acadiana pregame edition. Big Football Friday show coming at you. So stick around. After a brief timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
And it's time for our weekly Football Friday tradition. We trot out over-unders, and they're all on LSU football this week. Wouldn't have it any other way. CD, I don't want to waste any time. We're already getting good response on social media. Let's bring it over the airwaves. We'll hit the music, and then I'll unleash the beast.
Exciting and new.
And this is old school. B2BS here. Just three over-unders. No foolishness, no sink or swim. Mixed in there, CD. Three over-unders all on LSU at Mississippi State. First up, LSU run game hits 150 yards on the ground. Will it be over-under 150 rushing for LSU as a team? Number two, part due. Joe Burrow throws for 3.5 touchdowns. We know that's not physically possible, so it's a true over-under number. Burrow, 3.5 touchdown passes, over or under. And finally, as a team, Mississippi State scores 17 points, over or under. That one actually may be one where a push is entirely possible. But call us up, let us know what you got. Let's have some fun with this one. We got about 11 minutes before Ken Trahan hops aboard, and we talk Saints football. So call us now, 706-0111. Clint, what say you?
For me, starting things off, I think LSU's run game goes over 150 yards on the ground. A lot of it is going to wind up coming probably in the fourth quarter. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Joe Burrow pulled around like late third quarter, early fourth, and that's not going to wind up affecting my over-under for Joe Burrow at all. I think he goes over. He winds up hitting that four touchdown mark.
I'm starting to think you have LSU putting up a 50 burger.
I wouldn't be surprised if they put up a 50 burger, considering the fact that Mississippi State's defense isn't the same defense they saw last year. You don't have a lot of those first rounders. I feel like this team is going to be more than up to the challenge, especially because of the fact it's not on a Saturday night in Stark Vegas. It's a mid-afternoon type game. I think they're going to be more than up for the challenge because, in fact, they've been playing a lot of these 11 a.m. games this year, and I think that's going to be a big reason why Joe Burrow goes off, has four touchdowns. But when it comes to Mississippi State scoring 17 points, I've been kind of juggling back and forth with this one since you sent me the rundown earlier today. I'm going to go under here. I think they wind up just putting up two touchdowns. I'll go slightly under there, but I'm not necessarily the most confident in the world of taking that under.
Sounds like Clinty Vegas wants to take a drive to Biloxi and put money on LSU to cover this game. I'm going to charitably say that Clint feels this one's going to be a 51-13 type of affair in Stark Vegas. I disagree with you on a couple of fronts. I like those submissions, though. Let's get some more shots up. Call us now. We'll get you in the queue. 706-0111. The only time we agree is on the first one. LSU will go over 150 yards on the ground. A week ago, led by not just Clyde Edwards-Helaire eclipsing the 100-yard mark, but the emergence of Ty Davis-Price. What's up with all these three-name running backs? LSU at 218 on the ground against Florida. Over 9 yards a carry. That'll be lower. But the renewed emphasis on the run game, that part will continue. I think LSU wants to be a little more balanced getting into the meat of this season and the schedule. I think that's exactly part of the game plan for Joe Brady and Steve Ensminger. Did they map this thing out exactly as it's playing out in August? Maybe yes, maybe no. They're taking what defenses are giving them, but I don't think they want to abandon the run game to the extent that we kind of saw it against, let's just say, Texas on the road week 2. LSU getting more balanced. I believe that continues this week. So I think over 150 yards as well running the football. As for part due, Joe Burrow, 3.5 touchdowns. Give me under. This one is tough because with that balance, Clint, boy, you almost have to give somewhere. Otherwise, LSU is putting up 50 or 60 in this game. And I don't know that I exactly see it being that prolific. But as far as Burbank Joe, he threw 3 last week against Florida, 5 against Utah State, 6 against Vandy, dipped down to 2 as the Tigers were a little bored against Northwestern State, and 4 in that memorable game in Austin. So if you're to look at some of the cumulative numbers, it's astounding. There is a reason, that he's considered a Heisman contender and maybe front runner. He's capable of throwing 4-plus touchdowns in this game. I don't think he will. I think part of that, again, is an emphasis on including the run game. I think you're going to see some of the backs take away from what would otherwise be Joe Burrow touchdowns. So I'll go under there. I will go over Mississippi State 17 points, so I disagree with you. I think LSU's defense will continue to be a little of the storyline come Monday. But again, if you're winning by 2-3-plus touchdown margins, it's a minimal concern. It's something that's in the back of everybody's head, but it's a minimal concern. We have to point out the huge discrepancy of time of possession, because that's what leads to this for LSU's defense, in large part, but not exclusively, dedicated to that. Here's what I mean. Last week against Florida, the Gators had 16.5 minutes more possession than LSU. And it didn't really matter on the scoreboard, did it? Especially not in the second half. LSU's offense is scoring not just record numbers, but at a record pace with tempo. I think that's going to continue to leave the defense vulnerable, at least in this game. So I think Mississippi State scores over that 17 number. But again, LSU's offense will more than do enough to make this a game that's comfortable in the fourth. I'm not quite with you. I don't think it's going to be one of those 35-point-plus margin type of ball games. I think Burrow will be playing into the fourth quarter of this game. But I think LSU ultimately will be able to let off the gas a little, say with 6 to 8 minutes left in the game.
I think it just, to me, it feels like this is a lot like what we saw a few weeks ago with the Vanderbilt game, just on the surface of everything, because I feel like, you know,
State's better than that, right?
You would think so. You would think so. But again, it's the fact they've got a relatively young quarterback in there. The defense isn't necessarily as prolific as it's been in the past. I'm not 100% sold on this being as competitive as a ball game as you're seeing it. This is my opinion.
And by competitive, I think LSU is going to win by, I mean, somewhere about where the spread is, right? Okay. Vegas is good for a reason. Somewhere in that 17 to 21, at most 24 points type of range. So LSU going to Starkville and winning that convincingly, tell any of us that are talking or listening right now what I just said from 2 years ago and see how we respond to that. That would be what I tell you. This game was lopsided in the other direction 2 seasons ago, so a lot has changed. All right, we got some time. We can take a phone call, 706-0111. Otherwise, let's run down our Facebook responses so far. Prolific, our listeners on the Facebook machine. Kevin A. over on all 3 accounts. Again, that's LSU running it for more than 150. Burrow, 4 touchdowns or more through the air. And Mississippi State scoring at least 17 points. Brian B. agrees with him. Over on all 3 accounts. And finally, Damon G. over LSU on the ground. Under Burrow touchdown passes and under Mississippi State scoring points. So far, there's only one unanimous, CD, only one unanimous selection. Everybody feels as if LSU is going over 150 on the ground. I think we're all starting to see a common theme. We're starting to see an offense that's taking what the defense is giving, but also kind of being able to understand that everybody's gearing up now against this passing attack. Everybody's doing what they can to bracket Jefferson and Chase. And without Marshall out there, it gets a little easier to do that, but it's easier said than done. You want to keep 1 and 2 out of your end zone, and for moving the chains, good luck to you. Nobody's been able to do it so far. All right, we've got our over-unders just about tucked away to sleep for the segment. CD's taking a call. If we can fit it, we will. Don't forget, we got Ken Trahan coming up within the next 5 minutes to talk New Orleans Saints football. CD, who do we have aboard?
We got Ken on the line.
Let's sprint out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Ken, we got to be quick, but what you got?
Real quick. You know, I don't believe in no trap games as a joke. LSU in a blowout. Saints going to win by 3 or 4 points. In the story, this pipe dream is a pipe dream. I don't believe in no such thing as that stuff, so forget about it. There you go.
Ken's on the board. He doesn't need over-under. Saints win, small. LSU wins, big. And we head into a break. Don't forget, Football Night in Acadiana, the pregame edition from 6 to 6:30. We'll break down a lot of tonight's action, and I'll span the state. Some really, really big ones in North Louisiana, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. And then after, STM and Turlings tonight on Acadiana Sports Station. Clint's got Football Night in Acadiana post-game style. We are all in, as always, for high school football. And after a brief timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Carson and Barnes Circus invites you to explore a world of magic under the big top, where fantasies and dreams become a reality. Imagination will be reached as the elusive unicorn prances through the center ring, and dinosaurs shake the ground that we walk on as we travel back millions of years, and majestic Asian elephants captivate your heart. This fantastic adventure can only be found under the Circus Big Top. Visit BigTopShow.com or call 580-743-7292.
Don't miss the Carson and Barnes Circus in Lafayette, October 18th through the 20th.
You like eating at Ruffino's on the river, so do I. And Acadiana Sports Station, hey, we want to give you $50 so you can enjoy your next experience over on Camellia Boulevard. That's right. You can enter to win a $50 gift card to Ruffino's on the river, and all you have to do is go to the website, 1037thegame.com, and enter to win in the 1037 The Game Clubhouse, and you can be celebrating life with Ruffin & Company over at Ruffino's on the river on Camellia Boulevard.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Back in from break and ready to talk some Saints football. Doing our best to line up Ken Trahan for this segment. We'll see if we can't find him. I know our man's busy. He not only works for CrescentCitySports.com, and when I say works for, he owns it. Does a lot of work for it. But he's also the GM, chairman of the board for the Saints Hall of Fame Museum. So I know that Ken had some work to do over at the museum up until 4:30. As soon as he gets out here momentarily, we're going to do our best to bring him on the program. I'd like to get his reaction to the news within the last hour. The Saints have officially ruled out Alvin Kamara for the team's game Sunday at Chicago. And so without Breeze, without Kamara, what other tricks will Sean Payton have up his sleeves against the league's best defense in the Chicago Bears? And how much can the Saints defense maybe pull a bit of a switcheroo in this game? Well, everybody's looking at Khalil Mack, understandably, by the way, looking at that Bears defense. Is anybody focused on what Dennis Allen's group is doing? Marshawn Lattimore suddenly playing like one of the best cornerbacks in the league. I would imagine he draws the assignment of Allen Robinson. After that, how do the Saints match up with the Bears' offense that may also be without its starting quarterback? Mitch Trubisky still listed as questionable, and apparently all week Trubisky has been splitting reps with Chase Daniels. So a lot that's going to be a little interesting heading into this ball game. Each team potentially without its starting quarterback. Alvin Kamara, one of the league's best running backs, going to sit as well. We learned also within the last hour that Jared Cook is out in this ball game dealing with an ankle injury of his own. So the Saints offense certainly will look different. Changes the challenge. How do they get after it? I think we're all going to find out. Again, if we can bring Ken on at some point in this segment, we will do our best there. But right now, Clint is not giving me a thumbs up. I won't shoot him a different finger. He's just a good friend of the program like that. So Clint, you're welcome. All right, I'll continue to go in a different direction, and I guess while we have time, happy to take your phone calls on the subject, and we can keep letting your answers to the sink or swim question of the day trickle in as well. You know it's over-under time. It's Friday. That's how we do it with LSU football. I want to note the Tigers lit 150 yards on the ground as a team. Joe Burrow, over under 3.5 touchdown passes, and Mississippi State, will they score 17 points over or under? While we got some time, Clint, let's get the Twitter response so far to these three over-unders. I know you put all three out there. What are we getting so far?
So far, we're all unanimous when it comes to the first one, over-under. LSU's run game hits 150 yards on the ground, 80%. It's overwhelming right now how many people are thinking LSU's run game hits that over mark. With Joe Burrow, it's still decisive. 67% saying Joe Burrow goes over 3.5 touchdowns. And, Ben, it is neck and neck at this point when it comes to the final over-under about Mississippi State scoring 17 points. But right now, the under has the lead, 56% of the vote.
That would be a turnaround performance for this LSU defense. It wouldn't be one that you can hang your hat on and say, wow, they're going to be fine moving forward. Why? I'm really not sure yet about how prolific Tommy Stevens, dinged up, and Mississippi State's offense are. I just think they're going to get enough possessions. It does become a numbers game at some point. If Florida had 16.5 more minutes of possession, if LSU is going at lightning speed and they give that many opportunities to Mississippi State, I think they've got an opportunity to go above 17. So the unanimous under on Twitter. I wonder if I've given the kiss of death or if they are. Time will tell. We're getting some more response on Facebook as well. Jamie G. See, this is what I like. Putting numbers out there, CD, not just over-under, but supporting it. Jamie G says under the bar on 150 rushing yards. He's given 125. He's got Burrow at 4 touchdowns. That right there is an over. And that State scores 10. That would be under for the ball game. Clayton B chiming in as well. Over on LSU rushing, under on Burrow passing touchdowns, and over finally on the Mississippi State final score line. So interesting. So we got the Saints. Yeah, we've been there in this show. We'll continue to do it. LSU, we've given you some thoughts there. Clint, I did want to save this for our final segment, but we got a little extra time now. Live radio, nothing like it. Raging Cajun scored an awfully big win last night. 37-20 UL over A State. A game that was ugly at the half, and then we started to see the Red Wolves climb back into it. But what a job of hitting the accelerator. And for once, it wasn't Trey Regis down the stretch. It was a very healthy dose of Raymond Calais. And right now, nobody can catch up with the speedster from Cecilia.
It was just an all-around great performance. And, we saw what happened, especially in the second half, where Arkansas State started clawing back. And I kind of got the same concerns I did a few weeks ago when the Cajuns headed up to Ohio in the second half, where things started to turn towards the Red Wolves, and it was definitely a little concerning, but luckily we saw the Cajuns kind of get some great field position off of a solid kick return to really kind of slam the door shut late in that ball game. And then we saw a huge defensive stop on 3rd and 1, and that 4th down stop where they wound up pushing him back for a couple yards. Thank you, Chauncey Manak.
My biggest storyline in August was, how good is Levi Lewis going to be? First full-time year as the starter. I guess I'll say that a different way. First year as the full-time starter? Okay, that feels better. Now you're giving me a thumbs up. All right, so I'll give you the other finger in return now. Turnabout's fair play. With this being his first year in that role, I wondered how much improvement we would see. And I'll tell you one thing I did see last night. I just happened to catch this. I feel like it was into the first quarter, early second quarter, and they ran just a pretty simple read option where he kept it around the left side and scampered for an easy 13 or 14 yards on a first down. Why doesn't that happen more often? Is it about Napier wanting to protect Lewis? I think that's what you hear a lot when you ask him about it. Wow, would this offense take on a different element if they intentionally ran the quarterback? And I'm not digging on a team that scored 37. Looks like they're better than everybody in the Sun Belt except for App State, and they're closing the gap there. But that seems to be maybe the one area where this offense can still grow, because running the football, I don't think anybody's better in the Sun Belt. I don't know that it's particularly close either. I wondered how much better Levi Lewis would get this year. I don't know how much better he's gotten. The area that's crept up on everybody where there's been dramatic improvement, it's been the defense.
It really has been the defense, but I want to kind of jump back at what you're talking about with Levi Lewis. I feel like it's just the fact that Billy Napier wants to have Levi Lewis be that true quarterback instead of a dual threat. I feel like that may be one of the things that's kind of handcuffing.
I think it's something else.
I mean,
I don't think he trusts what's behind door number two, and I don't blame him.
Yeah,
because who would play right now? It'd probably be Magale, right?
Yep, Magale would definitely be the guy.
I think that's where the issue lies. I think right now he knows there's such a stark contrast and difference between what he can trust with his number one and his number two that he's maybe trying to have him preserve a little bit from taking some of those hits and having to go down the line, because the kid obviously is dynamite with the football in his hands, but we're not seeing a lot of him taking off and running. Again, my two cents.
And I'm kind of with you as well. It has a lot to do with the fact that he is the starting quarterback and there's not a whole lot of confidence, and that's not a knock against them all, knock against the backup guys they have, but I think if Billy Napier, hand behind his back, probably would wind up loving to have Levi Lewis versus some of those other guys, and I think that's why we're not seeing him be the dual threat quarterback. I feel like Levi Lewis needs to be to take this team to the next level, because I feel like if he uses his legs like he had been, he can wind up doing some amazing things.
Cajuns are now through the first 2 months of their season. It's one of those weird deals. We reminded everybody on yesterday's show, two games in the month of October. Strange. Played on Wednesday last week at home against App State. Thursday this week on the road against Arkansas State. Next up will be November the 2nd. I would have to think the Cajuns will be heavily favored at least by 5 or 6 points in every game through the rest of the regular season.
I think except maybe the Troy game. I feel like that's the one where I'm always going to wind up putting Troy as a prohibitive favorite unless I'm told otherwise.
No. I think you're looking historically at Cajuns versus Troy. This year's edition, I think UL is going to be favored in that football game.
I wouldn't be surprised if Troy, at least 5-point favorites in that one, at least to me.
Is this the part where we're going to bet on what the spread's going to be? That's the type of, like, let me make up a word real quick, degeneracy that even Cousin Dino can't dream of.
It's meta-degenerate right there.
We're going to bet on what the spread is going to be.
Betception.
I got to throw it to a break. That just blew my skull open a little bit. Maybe Ken Trahan will blow my mind and be available when we return. I do want to see if we can talk some Saints with him. If not, we'll keep it rolling on LSU and UL. So stick with us. After a brief timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports. But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Getting closer to 5 o'clock, back in with more of the good stuff. All right, no Ken Trahan, no big deal. We'll move it along. We'll catch up with Kenny New Orleans later in this Saints football season. Some interesting notes. According to Bill Martin, he is the Senior Associate AD over Communications at Mississippi State, worked at LSU for a long time, really good guy. But over in Stark Vegas, Bill Martin telling Jacques Doucet, Acadiana's own, that there are less than 1,000 tickets available for the ball game tomorrow. LSU versus Mississippi State, a lot of LSU fans expected to make that trip. See if you can counterbalance some of the cowbell. It is loud. Covered a number of games over there in Davis-Wade. It's something you can't prepare for, but you better bring some earplugs. Maybe a little bit of Excedrin. Both couldn't hurt. I thought this was interesting as well, CD. Robert Munson, who works for LSU, he tweeted out some of the particulars on what LSU did with concessions for that Tigers-Gators game on Saturday night. If you thought it was just a record night for television viewers, I'm going to share these numbers with you, Clint, and tell me what comes to mind immediately. We can take some calls as well. 706-0111. LSU had a record ball game with concessions, $1.175 million. Almost $1.2 million in gross sales in the general seating areas only. This doesn't include the suites. A shade under $55,000 for beer, wine, about $53,000 in water, soda, almost $12,000 in hot dogs, $6,200 in popcorn, $6,000 in burgers. What leaps off the page for you there?
For me, I think it's without a doubt the how things are so like dead even when you look at water, soda, and beer, wine.
Yes.
Like 54,000 to 52,000, and of course I'm rounding down here, but still, that's a pretty close kind of, just you look at it, it's wild.
What the hell, beer and wine crowd? What the hell?
And again,
that's the first thing it makes me gravitate toward. I understand that there are probably as many, if not more, people in the stands that are not drinking slash of drinking age than are drinking. But that's weak sauce. For all of the years of begging for alcohol to be sold to you in the stands instead of sneaking it in and bootlegging it into Death Valley, how is there not a bigger discrepancy there? I was floored to learn that. And again, understand, these numbers do not include the suites where there is just liquor being consumed at rapid, rapid paces.
Exactly. And it makes you wonder, of course, this is coming from a record day at Tiger Stadium, a sold-out crowd of 102,000-plus. My question is, I want to look at how it was earlier in the season when you had the Georgia Southern games and all that, just to kind of, just for comparison's sake for me, because I want to see how much it changes game to game.
You know something else to think about? The weather was really good.
It was fantastic.
And so you didn't need as much hydration for the sake of hydration. You know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Think about the comparison would be that LSU-Texas game in Austin.
Yeah.
I know that was on the road, but
sweltering.
By all accounts, they were playing a football game in Somalia, is what I keep hearing, weather-wise. So this was different. This was fall weather. And still, the water soda crowd just right there nipping at the heels of the beer wine crowd. Just saying, man, if it just means more beer and you've wanted it for decades, patronize.
Exactly. And you can about imagine, like you talk about the weather, about imagine what it would be like if LSU was playing Mississippi State at Tiger Stadium this weekend. That place would be rocking with how nice of weather it would be.
But maybe not for a 2:30 game. The weather would still be good at 2:30, not as good as it would be in the evening, and you wouldn't have all day to get ready for the tailgate. So I don't know. I found those numbers very intriguing, though. And they're reported by Aramark, and that's LSU's concessions partner. Again, not including club/suites. Just found them interesting. Wanted to make sure I passed them along to you. One other thing I'll pass along. It's funny what happens when you have scheduled guests and they don't show up. You just kind of venture into story land. Here's my story for you. The last time I covered a football game at Davis Wade Stadium, this is just darn good hospitality. I'm covering the game. I go down. I do my interviews. And I come back up to write my story. Pretty standard fare. And somebody walks around. And in one hand was a suitcase of Michelob Ultra. In the other hand was a suitcase of Bud Light. And it was somebody who worked for Mississippi State. Like, hey, man, you want one? Clint, that's the greatest thing of all time. Just trust me when I tell you that does not happen at other places.
Yeah,
I mean, it was almost like being, I don't want to say at a frat party, but like, hey, man, which one you want? It was an amazing thing to kind of witness.
Awesome.
Because my basis of comparison for years at LSU, long before I got on the beat, there was a mobile ice chest, for lack of a better term, that was moved down from the club level to the plebs, all of us who were covering the game. After it was over, and if you wanted to go fetch a beer, you can go fetch a beer. Leftover pizzas that, again, the debutantes of the world and the muckety-mucks, if they didn't finish them, we got them, right? And so the press would polish off your pizzas and drink whatever beer was left over. Until we didn't. No, the pizzas were still there. But there was a point in time, and I was told point blank that Joe Oliva's wife had a major problem with the idea of the press consuming beer and writing stories. I can just picture her telling Joe, this is going to warp their opinions of what they saw. Lady, did you just watch Les Miles' offense for four quarters? Get out of my face with that. I need a beer, right? I just watched LSU have the defense and special teams their way toward like a 19-14 win over Mississippi State. That's how it felt a lot of times to cover those LSU games. So I contrast the experiences in Tiger Stadium in that press box with just some of the greatest, like, just felt like it was right out of Eastbound and Down. You know what I mean? Hey, man, which one you want? Just walking around with a suitcase of Ultra with some beers that are sweating because they haven't been iced down probably in the last 20 minutes. Hey, man, which one you want? So God bless the people that are going over to Stark Vegas to cover that football game. It is fun outside of the stadium. Sometimes you don't know until people like me tell stories. Occasionally it's fun inside the stadium as well. Enough of that. Clint, let's get to our final word.
What's up, Katie Anna? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Challenge. I'm not the only one that thinks this Sunday against the Bears, down Breeze and Kamara, will be the biggest game planning and play calling challenge in the career of Sean Payton. Does that mean that the stakes on this game are as high as they've been for some of the Saints' last couple of postseason runs, even the Super Bowl a decade ago? Of course not. But think about all of the fingers and arms that are starting to be tied behind Payton's back right now. This certainly is going to be a big-time challenge for Sean Payton. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. They're your final stop to fill the stomach and tank as you head home on Maurice Avenue. Justin Vincent, scheduled to join us when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by. Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
Ready to roll. It's hour two of three. You're listening to Bumper Sports back in and live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. We got high school football coming at you in less than 2 hours. Plenty of conversation along those lines is coming. Sage Ryan. And LCA had a big win last night at Notre Dame. Sage will join the program in about 40 minutes, and then football night in Acadiana, the pregame edition from 6 to 6:30. But right about now, let's keep the train rolling. Talking LSU football. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, Justin Vincent, Development Officer for the Tiger Athletic Foundation. How are you, Justin?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, life's pretty good, especially after the LSU-Florida game a week ago. Give me your two cents on that atmosphere and maybe what the 12th man did, the purple and gold faithful.
It was pretty awesome, man. I hadn't seen it like that in a long time. They were loud from start to finish. I think the players ultimately feed off of that, and they made it just about impossible for those guys as they can as far as crowd noise goes, and our guys did the rest.
We touched on it this time last week. LSU got loose on the ground, 218 yards rushing, and your guy, Ty Davis-Price, finally started to show what he can do. I guess your two cents on that run game and where it, I guess, moves going forward.
Obviously, you know, that run game, the needle moves with Clyde and having Ty, you know, able to do what he did last week, just as a cherry on top. And hopefully we can get a couple other ones going, too, as well. But you know, ultimately, I think in SEC, everybody's running game is just about the same right now. It's not above and beyond. It's not below, but it's right in the middle. And I think, you know, with the offenses, a lot of these teams run, and it kind of puts a damper on the run game as far as, you know, getting a lot of downhill stuff. It's all, you know, zone blocking and a couple of power plays for that. But those two young men have did a great job. And, you know, I expect them to continue success as the season goes on.
A lot of us, Justin, continuing to realize just how much of a damper that this offense can put on the defense. I've been pointing this out, but 16 and a half minutes of possession more for Florida than LSU. That's not always a tremendously important stat, not when you can ring up 11 or 12 yards a play for an entire ball game. But what's your take on what that does to a defense and maybe the position it puts Aranda's group in?
Yeah, the guys are tired, man. It's obvious. But at the same time, they practice that way. So, you know, as far as excuses goes, I don't think, you know, you're not going to hear any from me, and you definitely won't hear it from those young men because they prepare for this. And, you know, sometimes teams are the best of you. I mean, it's good on good, you know, week in, week out, especially when we hit the SEC schedule. But I think it'll pick up as it goes on throughout the year. You can't do anything but learn from those type of things, especially when you're giving up the type of plays we did last week. The long third downs were brutal. But it's part of the game, you know. So at the same time, I expect them to clean that stuff up and be prepared moving forward.
Talking with former LSU Tiger Justin Vincent on 103.7 The Game. True or false, Starkville is the loudest place to play in the SEC?
False. By any means. And I'm not trying to downplay what they got going on. They got a great tradition with the Cowbells. You know, there's a reason why they're not allowed in any other stadium in the SEC. But at the same time, you know, I've played in some stadiums that's been really loud. But they do a great job, and they're consistent now. I give them that, and they're nonstop. I mean, everybody has a bell, from the mom, the dad, the kids, grandma and grandpa. Everybody has one. And I think, you know, they might get a slick every now and then. They might pipe some of that in because they don't seek that many people for it to be that loud.
I'm with you. And the only reason I bring it up, Gordy Rush has been on this program, and as a sideline reporter, maybe it's tough for him to actually hear and then also get what he needs in the mic. But he has said that that is a brutally loud place to be. He said, look, don't get me wrong. It's like you said, Justin, there aren't as many people there, but with the Cowbells, it's incessant noise, and it just doesn't stop.
Yeah, it's continuous, man. They are very consistent with that, and they're very proud of that. I know there's a couple shops in Starkville where you can actually go and purchase just bells, and you can get them customized and all that good stuff. But yeah, that's a great tradition they got going on there, but it isn't the loudest for me.
How do you reflect on LSU and where this football program was 2 years ago, when they got walloped at Mississippi State, and this time around, almost 20-point favorites, and with an offense that's humming around as good as anybody in the country?
Yeah, it's night and day, man. You know, with the change of the offensive scheme and getting back in the shotgun and doing a whole lot of RPO stuff, it's very different from when I played, and definitely different from 2 years ago, especially lining up in the I formation, too tight all the time, 11 personnel. So, it's so different, man, but it's so refreshing. You know, somebody asked me, you know, you should probably be upset because they're not running the ball as much. No, I think I would thrive in this type of offense, because early on, when I got to LSU, we ran a lot of gun stuff with Matt. You know, I ran a lot of balls out of the gun and had much success in it. But I think, you know, given due time and guys learn what they're looking for, because it's such a different look. As far as, you know, you looking at the line of scrimmage and stuff, but the offense is, man, it's a blessing in disguise for the LSU faithful, but it's also for some of us former guys. It's kind of like, well, dang, I wish they would line up and tight every now and then, but it, you know, whatever keeps the thing going and gets us going the right direction, man, as long as you get a dub on the board, I can care less.
I'm glad you brought up Matt Mauch. Did you get a chance to catch up with him last weekend?
Yeah, man, we had a great time. Me and, you know, Stringfellow and Anthony Piazza and some other guys, and Jack Hunt and Blaine Bash and Ross Cockle. We always had some drinks and some tacos on Tuesday, and it was pretty cool, man. They get to share old stories and reminisce a little bit.
I obviously, the three quarterbacks got together that have won national championships. They were the guest captains. You had a really cool RBU picture as well. So for our listeners that have no idea what the hell I'm talking about because they don't have Twitter, tell them about what that fraternity means to you and some of the guys that came back this past Saturday night.
That's awesome, man. Just to see a bunch of former guys, you know, in that picture with Stephen Ridley, Richard Murphy, who else is in there? I'm trying to think. It's on blank right now, but there's a few other guys in there. And it was just awesome, man. Anytime you can see any former guys you sit in a room with, and shared some stories and some time with, and some blood, sweat, and tears, it is always a good thing to see them come back and cheer on the Tigers. Obviously, I'm there every Saturday like clockwork, but just to see when they can come in and get away from the busy schedule to come back and celebrate with us is always a blessing.
Another moment or two with Justin Vincent. Is there any look ahead to the Alabama game within that building? I'm sure you're going to tell me no, but I guess maybe the better question is, how do you ensure that there's no look ahead?
Yeah, there isn't a look ahead. I don't think so. You know, obviously the powers that be, especially when it comes to the media, they're looking at it. And, you know, for Alabama, I would say I think they're looking at it. You know, I think Coach Saban, somebody asked him a question a few weeks back about, you know, have you seen LSU play yet? And da, da, da. He said, no, I haven't watched them play yet, but I've seen, you know, when I look at the stat sheet, they're up at the top in just about every category. You know, so I don't think anybody outside of that building is looking at that. I mean, inside the building, sorry, looking at that. But yeah, you just take one game at a time, especially when we're rolling such the way we're rolling right now. You don't want to get ahead of yourself and put the cart before the horse. So I think those guys are doing a good job of keeping those young men focused on the passing game.
I'll get one more for you, Justin. The things that we saw late in the ball game against Florida defensively, what do you take away from that that makes you believe, you know what, this group's going to be okay when they get backed into a corner against some of the best teams in America?
Yeah, you know, they just showed the fight and grit and determination that that defense has always had over the years. You know, those guys know, you know, when you sign a letter of intent to come to LSU that it stands for something. You're not just coming here to play ball. It's a brand. It's a style of football and a physicality that, you know, that we've had from day one. So I think with you know, the way the game started off and the way they finished, I think they're living up to the bill. And they're up for the challenge. You know, everything's up to those guys. But they're living up to the challenge, man, and I'm excited what lies ahead for them.
I'll sneak in a high school question. Sam Houston beats Barb. There's family for you on both sides of that. Did that shake up the Chuck?
Yeah, a little bit, man. That was the first time they ever beat Barb, ever. You know, we used to play them in scrimmages when I was in school. We used to, you know, kick the lining out of them. We never batted an eye. But Chad Park has brought a culture over there and changed the dynamics of that program, and they're moving upward. So I'm excited for him. Obviously, I'm not excited that they beat Barb, but at the same time, I can't be mad.
No, Davis Mesh and the Bucks, they'll be fine and have a great shot at making their way through the 5A playoffs. Justin, as always, you know I appreciate this. Keep up the great work.
All right, man. Thanks.
Justin Vincent, development officer with the Tiger Athletic Foundation. Really good follow on Twitter as well, @jvincent25. He likes to get involved with a lot of the stuff that happens around college football and the NFL too. So go follow him on Twitter if you haven't yet. I will say this about the noise factor, CD. It's tough when you go to Mississippi State. And Gordy Rush has been on this program and been very definitive on the subject. There aren't 100,000 plus like in Rocky Top or over in Tuscaloosa, down in the swamp, between the hedges, you know, 92,000 plus at Jordan-Hare Stadium. All of those places are loud as all get out. But it is the difference that the cowbell can make, and it's a ringing that's inside of your head. So Justin said it's not the loudest. Okay, maybe that's fair. But the hardest to deal with in terms of noise, I think it absolutely could be. And there's a difference between those two things, because if your ears are ringing for 60 straight minutes, that's going to have an effect on you. And so LSU has been practicing all week, I'm sure, to deal with this. And what a sad reality that there is a cowbell-only shop in Starkville. You people need to go back to your shanties. All right, that's more of a Happy Gilmore thing. I don't really mean that, but that's a sad, sad thing. If there's a, that sounds like Flanders, right, in The Simpsons, the Leftorium. There's a store only for left-handed people. Wait, there's a store only for cowbells? Come on, Starkville. Catch up with the times. I feel like I'm going to have to start making the Skip Burtman jokes, and maybe I will on the other side of this break. Might just have to dip into those waters. We're going to take a quick timeout, then we'll be back with more. Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
CD, we've made it, let's see, an hour and almost 19 minutes. Haven't yet touched on Pat Mahomes. Let's do that now. We'll get to the Chiefs win over the Broncos, the injury to Mahomes, what it means, and we'll tie it all in to this interesting Week 7 across the NFL landscape. You want to chime in on that? Anything else you've heard so far? We got time for you. 706-0111. And do not forget, less than 30 minutes from this very moment, about 27 minutes from now to be exact, Sage Ryan from the LCA Knights coming off a big win over the Notre Dame Pios. Sage will join the program at about 5:45. I watched a good chunk of that game last night. We were flipping back and forth. We caught some UL Arkansas State, Astros Yankees, just a resplendent night for local sports on national television. And I watched the play that he got injured on, Mahomes. Quarterback sneak, fourth and short. It wasn't fourth and goal, but he got the first. And it didn't really seem like he got stomped on, didn't really seem like anything out of the ordinary happened. We know he was injured coming into the ball game. And then you could almost see on a replay where they set that kneecap back into place. He's had an MRI. By all accounts, he's good. He's going to be okay, but he might miss a couple of weeks. Without him last night, I thought Matt Moore was serviceable, even more of a game manager than Teddy Bridgewater has been, I mean, at all. And there is a world of difference between Bridgewater coming into that Rams game, being thrown into the fire, and Matt Moore coming in to that game last night. He even got a defensive touchdown to kind of put some wind at his back and put a little wind in his sails. But I'm not sure that that's going to be enough for Kansas City to maintain their pace for the next couple of weeks. Mahomes being out is huge, not just from a fantasy football standpoint, but it could affect the NFL a good bit as well.
It's going to affect the NFL a whole lot, and I think this is worst-case scenario for the Kansas City Chiefs. Yes, they snapped that two-game losing skid.
Denver, by the way, is woeful.
Denver is absolutely woeful. I think that was a big reason why they were able to kind of hold on to get the win. It was pretty much almost like you had to have this guy in there, and he handled everything well. I think things aren't going to look much better in the next few weeks for those Kansas City Chiefs, and it winds up making the AFC a lot more wide open. Yes, the Patriots are the prohibitive favorite, but I think it makes this thing a little bit more interesting, especially in the AFC West.
I liked Houston after last night. I like Houston even more. I think that might just be your biggest challenger to the Patriots if the Chiefs can't kind of live up to the preseason hype and if this injury to Mahomes is going to be far-reaching. The league also is going to be without one of its stars for a little while. It's relying, I think, on fantasy football and so much of what we see right now, the daily fantasy to keep up interest. And for the casual football fan, this was a guy that they related to, even if they didn't root for the Chiefs. This is somebody that I think people that are younger could relate to as well. He's bringing a little different vibe to the sport, right? I mean, you heard it earlier from Dan Patrick on this station, right? The guy that brought the no-look pass to football, he's just different. And now this kind of generational talent's going to be on the shelf. How long? We don't know yet. But it's going to change the standings in the AFC. It's going to change the folks that have a chance to maybe actually make a deep postseason run. And I wonder if it affects some of the trade waiver wire movements in the middle of the season. I've seen it suggested that maybe the Chiefs have to go after somebody like an Eli Manning. Not sure that's the play. Maybe there's an opportunity to go after a quarterback that's out there, but I don't think that's the guy. But everybody else around the league seems to be putting in their backup and experiencing at least some semblance of success. Bridgewater's won. Gardner Minshew's winning games. Kenny Dimes has won some games. Kyle Allen leads a team. It's about to be 5-1. I don't know. The Chiefs have a lot of offensive talent, but we saw last night that when you take out arguably their biggest piece, they are going to struggle a little bit. Yes, they still did have a long touchdown pass that Moore threw. But outside of that one deep ball, boy, it was dink and dunk central. And so the Chiefs, we'll see. I put them kind of on watch before their game last night. I said on the show yesterday afternoon, they're one of five teams that if they lose, boy, it's going to get awfully tough for them. Well, they didn't lose, but they are going to be without their best player for a little while. And so now we hit the fast forward button. What's going to happen to the Rams, who have lost three in a row? They're at Atlanta, noon, Sunday. What's going to happen to Chicago? They lose to the Saints. They're in for a world of hurt. And what's going to happen to the two teams that play Sunday night? One of them is going to be really in pain, Dallas and Philly. So it's going to continue to be an interesting weekend, but I think everything's going to be clouded now by this injury to Pat Mahomes. I know this if I'm the Chiefs, especially in the midst of what is a kind of a contract push type of year for Mahomes. I think there's incentive on both the player side and the franchise's side to let this one ride out and make sure he's 100% or close to it before coming back.
Exactly. They're going to be taking their time, making sure he's ready to go. I know I was hearing him, Bill Ryder filling in for Jim Rome earlier, and he was saying basically, he was definitely posing this statement, maybe sit him until December 1st to make sure that he's healthy. But then again, if he's going to be healthy by December 1st, is there going to be a chance for a playoff run? Because you know there's going to be some teams, I think, namely the Buffalo Bills, who are going to try and make a run towards being a top three, top four seeded team. And then you see where everybody else is. It's going to be tough. And, you know, this is something I thought about like right after I got done talking earlier. Is the Madden curse undefeated now?
Is it undefeated? That's tough. I think that a lot of people have been reaching out for Brand Mahomes. I mean, we're seeing it now with State Farm, right?
Yeah.
What else did you say?
I was going to say I thought you were going to go more with Zion because Zion just keeps getting endorsements everywhere. He just got signed up with Mountain Dew.
Yeah, but come on. And we're going to tie this into the fact that he's got a knee injury and might be out for a couple of weeks. That's a different deal. He's out at the beginning of an 82-game NBA season. That'll be fine. This Mahomes thing, though, is very interesting because do you rush him back into production? I can tell you this. If they entered last night's ball game at undefeated.
Yeah.
Or at one loss. And if they're undefeated, one loss right now through 7 weeks of the season, I think that they can let him sit. I mean, I don't know, maybe until week 11 or 12 if they really wanted to. But as they're just, what, 4-2, I believe?
Yeah.
There might be a little bit of pressure. I mean, they've lost a couple of games. They want to keep pace. They want as close to home field advantage as they can get. Even if the Pats have the one seed, they want that two seed over Houston. There's incentive to bring him back, but I think it's going to be overcome by a lot of common sense that says, you know what, let your franchise player get right. Will they let Matt Moore guide the ship in the interim? Don't know. I do know this. Photos indicate that Matt Moore was literally part of a franchise that was evaluating talent at the pro day for Kyler Murray. I want you to let that sink in. A lot of people are out there trying to sell insurance, right? They're sitting on the couch, Vinny Testaverde style. This dude had already moved on to a front office. He was evaluating Kyler Murray at his pro day at Oklahoma, and now he might be playing against him soon.
That's wild to kind of think about it, and it really shows how much it's that next man up mentality. But that's another level to it when you just think about it.
Yeah.
Dude just coming from the front office and just be like, imagine if it was like.
From the grave is basically what that is. Yeah. From the grave. Get the Undertaker to dig us up and unearth Matt Moore. See if we can get him back out onto the field. So an interesting start to week 7 in the NFL. Pat Mahomes on the shelf for how long? Time will tell. But his MRI came out okay today, at least that per the KC Chiefs. All right, halfway through our 5 o'clock hour, we still got a lot on the agenda. We got to throw shade on the other side of this break. I made a reference to this earlier. We let off the program saluting the Houston Astros. They're on the cusp of making it to the second World Series appearance in 3 years for the franchise. And yet the Yankees had some fans that tried to spoil the fun. I will elaborate and I will chunk that shade like it's going out of style when we return. I also am excited to bring Sage Ryan onto the program. A guy that's got, I think, as much potential as a recruit in this area as anybody. Maybe along with Walker Howard over at St. Thomas More. Those are two guys in the 2021 in 2022 classes, respectively, that are going to bring a lot of college coaches into the Hub City. So excited to bring Sage Ryan aboard. That'll be in about 17 minutes. So a lot to stick around for, including football night in Acadiana beginning at 6, and then the pregame show for STM hosting Turlings. Danny Jones and company at 6:30. It'll be a big afternoon turning into a big evening here on Acadiana Sports Station. So after a brief timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back in business, another half hour to go on the program today. At least this program, Bumper to Bumper Sports, runs until 6, and then 6 to 6:30, it's the football night and Acadiana pregame show. We'll get you ready and get you hyped for week 7 of the high school football season, and it technically started last night. The biggest game in the area, maybe around the state, LCA 17, Notre Dame of Acadia Parish 14. That one played over in Crowley, and in our next segment, about 10 or 12 minutes from now, Sage Ryan from the LCA Knights will join the program. I'm excited to have him aboard. Three-phase Sage, they call him. He's got all kinds of recruiting hype that surrounds him. We'll ask him a little about that. We'll talk even more about that game and just what LCA is trying to prove with some of the incredible scheduling this year. Not only moving up from 1A to 2A ball, but Evangel, Westgate, I mean, Acadiana all in the schedule. We got a lot to discuss with Sage Ryan. Again, all that is future talk. Right about now, I want to get down to something we do every single day. I want to issue a reminder to you. It's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business, like the pros at Patio Center. They invite you to visit the website, patiocenter.com. Shades.com. You're going to fall in love with the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, of course. And make sure that you take time to sit down with Mark and Company, because they're going to take time to help you create a vision. They'll fulfill it, and by the time we get to next spring, next summer, you will have the baddest patio game on the block. I guarantee that. And it all starts with a trip to PatioCenter.com. They are the kings of customization, and it's truly never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at PatioCenter.com.
CD, it was one thing when Josh Reddick and company in the outfield were subjected to all kinds of flying debris. And by debris, I mean water bottles. All right, that's one thing. And also baseballs. Souvenir baseballs were being thrown down at Astros outfielders at Game 3 earlier in the week. Did you see what happened before last night's Game 4 when Zach Greinke was warming up in the Stros bullpen pregame? Tell me that you've seen this storyline.
I had kind of glanced at that storyline. I haven't gone full hog on it, so I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
It's pretty disturbing, and yet, by all accounts, nothing unique to the Bronx and Yankee Stadium. NJ.com's Brendan Cootie. Okay, that's just kind of a funny name. K-U-T-Y. And that's not the shade portion of the show, but Brendan Cootie reporting that at least one Yankees fan ejected from the stadium pregame last night because of the insults he was hurling at Zach Greinke. Again, he's warming up in the bullpen. According to the report from NJ.com, the fan was insulting not only Greinke's mother, but here's the really obscene part, insulting Greinke's well-publicized battles with social anxiety and depression. Now, here's the thing. I think we've all either lived the experience or maybe seen on movies and TV the idea that you want to diagnose the pain from a player or coach, right? You know what's going on in their life, and that's the kind of smack that you want to talk. But wow, this one goes to a bit of a different level. Mamas, usually off limits, but I'll even forego that for the sake of this conversation. If a player has come out and been very public, as Greinke has in his past, battles with anxiety and depression, and that's the pain point that you want to use to try and crush a guy, get his spirits down before a game like this, I'm happy to hear that he was ejected, because I don't think that would happen in every stadium around America. And I'm really not just limiting the talk here to pro baseball, right? I think if you looked at major college athletics, you know, the NFL, even the NBA, and there's a tangent I want to get to here. You go to all those different levels, and I think a lot of this type of fan behavior is just permitted. We're learning, even though it's slow sometimes, we're learning as a society that there are certain things that you aren't entitled to just because you pay the fare of a ticket to a ball game. I think everybody involved with the malice at the palace years back, right? The Palace at Auburn Hills, Detroit versus Indy, basketball, Pistons, Pacers, and Haymakers being thrown. Certainly, Ron Artest, Captain Jack, Steven Jackson, everybody involved, Jermaine O'Neal, certainly they were wrong. But you can't throw things at players on the court. You can't go out there and touch a player. And I think as we kind of learned this year with Russell Westbrook and all the accusations that were lobbed at the Utah Jazz fans, just because you buy a ticket, you don't get to say things that cross human lines, right? You don't get to say things to somebody's face that you would never dare say in person. And here's the thing. When some of these Twitter finger guys, and I guess there's the Twitter finger gals as well, but when they certainly, or finally, I should say, get out face-to-face with somebody, with the difference being that, you know, they're like on the fourth row above the bullpen, well, that's still not exactly in an alley saying it to Zach Greinke's face, because he'd probably smash you if you did that to his face. I'm glad to hear he was ejected, and I'm still throwing shade at Yankees fans. I think the best thing possible for all involved, let's just end your season. In fact, that could happen here within the next 5 or 6 hours. Yankees fans, you can go make fun of each other at that point. Leave Greinke and stuff that's serious like this, keep it out of your mouth.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Just felt like I needed to address that subject. All right, it's been a big show today. You're just joining us. The big news, Alvin Kamara officially ruled out for the Saints game at Chicago this Sunday. Zion Williamson will miss a couple of weeks with a knee injury, although it's not expected to be severe. All right, we're going to take our final break of the hour. Sage Ryan, when we return, time to talk LCA over Notre Dame. Do not go anywhere. After a brief timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now, back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Back in one, final time in the 5 o'clock hour. We're having a lot of fun today. It's a football Friday, but the football technically began Thursday night, especially for the LCA Knights taking down the Notre Dame Pios, 17-14, one of the games of the area, not just for this week, but I think all season long. That one has been highly anticipated. And our next guest, he's been one of the best players from around Acadiana all season long. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. He plays, well, everywhere, offense, defense, special teams. They call him three-phase Sage. From the Lafayette Christian Academy Knights, it is Sage Ryan. Sage, how are you today?
Great, and you?
I'm doing well. You got to tell me, though, 17-14, I'm sure you guys always believed, but what was the talk like amongst this team heading into the ballgame last night?
There was a great football team, well-coached, just a technically sound football team that we would love to compete against, and this was the talk of the town. This was for all the bragging rights who was going to be the dominant force in 2A, so I was just excited to face them.
What was the challenge like as you played on defense last night? We've all seen, I think, the thunderous hit that you laid on a running back from Notre Dame. But when you go up against that type of offense, what were your keys in a game like you competed in last night?
Just technically, you just have to be technically sound all night. the blocking scheme that they had against us was good. You just had to stay low. They were big up front. You just had to be technically sound, like I said. Just they was gonna hit you hard, so we wanted to be the hammer, not the nail, and I just love to compete with them.
On the other side of the football, a couple of different quarterbacks out there for your offense. That's nothing new for you, right? I understand that toward the end of the game, it was Errol Rodgers set you up with a big pass that set up that game-winning field goal. So especially when you needed it late, tell me about the connection between you and Errol.
He's like my brother. We get each other well. He know when, like, I'm running full speed to where to throw the ball. And, like, that pass up the middle, it was perfect. I just had to see it and look it in. And he set up Louis Davis for a big-time field goal win. So I'm proud of him. Our connection is strong. He connects well with all of our receivers, as you can tell. He threw a big time ball to Ethan to get us 14-14. And just love him.
Sage Ryan, our guest, his LCA Knights beat the Pios in a big district ball game last night, 17-14. On special teams, do you get surprised when people still kick to you, whether it's a kickoff or a punt at this point?
No, sir. I like the challenge that they took on. Kick to me. I was very excited when I got the ball in my hands because I knew where I was going before the ball because one defender came at me left, so I just went right and hit the nearest hole. And the punter actually came up to me at the end of the game and said, "No, the kicker, he said, you were actually the first one to return a kickoff return back on us." And he said he was proud of me, so That was just big for us. I just do what I can for my team.
I like that sportsmanship, and I know that you did have a return that went for six and was wiped off the board last night in Crowley. Hey, before we move on to some recruiting-type questions, how impressive, or I put it this way, how important has it been for this program to prove itself on a new level and scheduling Acadiana, Evangel, Westgate, moving up in classification from 1 to 2A, how important has it been to schedule these games and go out and win as many as you can?
It was a big challenge for us this year, and our coach always tells us to be the best. You got to beat the best. So we scheduled as many tough teams as we can just to get that, like, that memo that we can compete with the highest teams in Louisiana. And this season, it's been great with Coach Jacardi Carter. He's been doing a good job preparing us for each challenge throughout the year. And I'm ready to face some more dynamic teams these upcoming weeks. So I like the challenge. People said we couldn't compete against the highest people. So I just wanted to prove them wrong, us as a team, and that we can compete with the highest people. So, yeah.
Hey, you've got a lot of high school football still ahead of you, Sage. But when it comes to the collegiate game, do you hear that you'll play on one side of the football more than the other? Do you have aspirations to play both at the next level? What would you say there?
It depends where I go, whichever the coach needs me to do, I'm going to do it. I was going to determine it off my height, like how much I grow, to where I would want to play in college, and just talk to the coaches where I am on a depth chart. So that's a big reason why I'm going to play in college.
Another few moments with Sage Ryan. Good enough to join us on 103.7 The Game. How much, I guess, thought do you put into the recruiting process at this point? Not just in these football programs, but the schools, the locations where they're at, the type of schemes they run. Are you getting kind of involved in that type of stuff yet, or leaving it for the future?
I'm kind of leaving it for the future. I'm just focused on the season ahead. It's important for me to just stay focused and not worry about that stuff. It's going to come. But I've been talking to my parents about where I want to go. But it's just not really like a big thing right now. I still got two more seasons. Well, one more season and this one. Yeah, and I'm just focused with my teammates. I'm not really caught up in that extra stuff. Yes, sir.
I got to tell you, Sage, I've been here now for the better part of 5 years. So before my time in this area, I'm told that your older brother was some kind of fast and that he had an opportunity and did accomplish a lot with high school sports and beyond. I mean, how did that help form, I guess, who you are and how you approach sports?
I guess the speed just traveled to me somehow. He was amazing in high school and college. And we both returned punts and kicks, so it's like, I don't know, he just passed it down to me, and he's a big role model in my life. He really ain't have the height and the size, but his heart was so big, and his work ethic, I think that's where I get all that from. So, yeah, props to him.
Sage, it's great to catch up with you. Again, congrats on the win. Good luck to you and the Knights the rest of the season.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And thank you. Pretty impressive there, and a very impressive young athlete. He has a chance to be one of the best to come out of this area in a while. I know we saddle a lot of kids with those expectations. I think if you've seen him play, he can live up to them. I had the LCA game last year. In fact, Blaine Viator and I have called each of the last two state title games for LCA in the Dome. He was amazing last year. Offense, defense, special teams. He did his whole three-phase thing. He did that last year in December in the Dome. Doesn't surprise me that he's terrorizing people on a local level, even going up to Evangel and giving the willies to that storied program in Shreveport. It's incredible, and he's being chased by the who's who. LSU, Michigan, you name it, they're coming after Sage Ryan, so he'll have all kind of recruiting opportunities ahead of him. I want to take this in a little different direction. Clint's telling me we've got a few more minutes left in the hour. Good. Because let me say a few things about that LCA win over Notre Dame last night. First, you got to admit when you're wrong, at least I always do, I was wrong about this game. I told Blaine Viator yesterday in the program, I thought there was a chance that it was maybe a 7 to 13, 14 point type of win for the Pios. Wow. By all accounts, this is one that not only did LCA win by 3, but they had that touchdown by Sage Ryan taken off the board due to penalty on a return. I think this one could have been even more in LCA's favor. Again, by all accounts that I've received so far today, I wasn't at the game over in Crowley. But, Clint, you got to fess up when you're wrong. LCA was very much ready for this ball game, not just the road atmosphere. They're ready to play big boy type of football. And now they are absolutely the favorite to move up in classification and immediately win the Division III state championship. Having said that, they're going to see this team again. Don't know if it'll be the semis or the finals. They're going to see this team again, and that'll be a treat for everybody.
Exactly. It'll be an absolute treat for everybody, regardless of where this thing's going to be played at, when it's going to be played at. I think this is probably be one of the more entertaining matchups in the postseason that you just wanted to see right away.
There's one more thing I have to say about that win. I got to do this before we run out of time in the 5 o'clock hour. Don't forget, we got Football Night in Acadiana, the pregame show coming up from 6 to 6:30. My two cents, that was the biggest win in program history for LCA football. Seriously, I think it's bigger than the two state title games. No disrespect to the team out of Donaldsonville that they beat both times around in that ball game. This one is the biggest in program history. Acadiana would have been, all right, they dropped that ball game. Evangel's awfully impressive. Westgate's awfully impressive. This is bigger, even though it's not up in classification like Westgate was. It's bigger because they took down an area giant, and they did it again. With some conviction, they did it on the road, and they broke up a 50-game winning streak. I think this is a score, 17-14, and a result that's going to echo out in around the area for quite some time. Very impressive for Jacardi Carter and Trev Falk and LCA football. Again, our thanks to Sage Ryan. We're 2 hours in. We got half an hour to go. We'll keep talking prep football when we return. You've been listening to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.